B-Pod Studios.
The dynamic duo.
Don't feed me crap.
Of Boston Sports Radio.
Yeah, get it right, stupid.
Felger and Mass. Presented by DraftKings Sportsbook on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
They made shots that they missed last game. That's just what it is. It's going to be hard to beat anybody when they shoot 50% from the field and 50% from the three. They were the more physical team overall, and they got one on the road. They tried to embarrass us. They did embarrass us, so I think we got to realize that. Use it as fuel, whatever you want to say, but realize that the game can get out of hand whenever you're playing against a really good team like them that can score the ball and get stops. So overall, we just have to be better. We got a tough job to do to go over there and win, but if they did it, we can do it as well.
Hour three, Agenda Free Friday, no Gasper today. Jimmy Butler with his analysis of what went down in game one. It's largely right. It started with the 50% from behind the line. 82% in the first quarter. 82% behind the line in the first quarter is where it started. And they also get stops. That is a lethal combination. You're going to make your threes, take a lot, make them, and D up, unbeatable. Which I think, if that's the way they're going to play, they're unbeatable, they're the champion. He said, now it's time for us to go do the same thing. Do you think the Heat are capable of making this a series?
Yeah, making it a series? Sure. Yeah.
How about winning the series?
No. No, the Celtics, I'm sorry, Matt. The Celtics just have better shooters. They're deeper than Miami.
Yeah.
They're
look,
a better team.
And I think we felt that going in.
Yeah.
I mean, look, again, I don't know if they have the consistency from those guys on the outside to be able to match it. I just don't think they do. And more importantly, if the Celtics have their top four, five or six guys out there, how does Miami get the matchup? Like, they just can't free anybody up to get it. The Celtics are going to be covering everything. They just swarm the line at that end of the floor. So, you know, even if you wanted to tell me, this is the one thing I worry about with Golden State for the Celtics, just to jump ahead there for a second.
Oh, no, I'm not I guess I did say, can they win a title? Golden State, I think, matches up with them better than you think or people think, but go ahead.
And Curry and Thompson could shoot with a guy in their face.
Yeah, and so, like, they you're bigger than them and better defensively than Golden State, but they have that thing where they can light up from behind the line in a given half or a given game two and win solely on 24 minutes of hot shooting.
Exactly, and with people on them.
Yes.
Right? I think a lot of teams can't do it when they're guarded. Golden State can. But that aside, do I think Miami can do it enough times in this series to beat the Celtics? My answer is no.
They're undergunned.
No, my answer is no. They can't. Just a quick thing, too. You know who's been invisible in these freaking games?
Adebayo.
0.0.
It's like they don't run anything for him. He doesn't try and back any. I mean, every once in a while he's turning around in the lane, but it's not like.
He was kind of a force in the bubble.
He was their best player.
Yeah, he was awesome in that series, and now nothing.
What happened to this guy?
I don't know. I don't know what it is. If I were a Spoelstra, that would be my number one thing to look at. Can we start running some stuff through Adebayo that will free people up? But maybe they can't go there because they're not confident of him. If it ends up being Williams, they feel like it's not a win anymore. In the bubble, they felt like it was. I don't know. But he's been a non-factor.
Non-factor.
Invisible. Invisible at the offensive end.
So I don't see it for Miami. I think they can make it a series too, because I do respect Butler and his competitiveness, and you know, to lead the team to maybe they grab one in Boston and make it that kind of thing, or I don't know. I mean, I don't think you're going to win the next three, but I don't see how Miami wins three more. I don't see it. But so there's a reset on the Celtics for you. Right back to your calls. Here, let's put these back to back. Dan and Quincy, go ahead, Dan.
Tony, one thing, I felt this way at the time. It was a mistake to let Schwarber go on the Red Sox, man. The only disciplined hitter on the team, they let him go. Two-strike hitter, discipline, make pitches work. They just blew it on that departure. But, Felger, so you're not advocating that the Celtics just live and die with the three-point shot, because this signature is their defense, points off of defense, transition points off of defense. And after game one against Milwaukee, they were getting excoriated by the media for having the audacity to shoot three-pointers. I mean, this team is not known as a three. Even if you got to give up a point on a possession, you go to the basket, you play defense. If they start getting married and start getting into a measuring contest with a three-point shot, they're going to lose. They're going
to
lose.
I don't know, Dan. I used to think that was the case. And then every second or third night, they're winning a game based on a lethal quarter or half of three-point shooting. So I used to think the same thing. Live and die by the three, you'll die by it. They're not. They're shooting. The overall number is actually down a little bit. They're down just below 40 attempts a game, which, as we looked historically, was sort of like the defining line between too much. And so they've actually crept back below it overall. But when I'm looking at the games that they've won, at the center of it was a quarter or a half of lethal three-point shooting and a big number of attempts. So they're living by it, and it's not like it's an aberration. They keep doing it. So when you keep doing something, it's no longer an aberration. They're a 3-and-D team. I think it starts with the three. They're 3-and-D, and that's the key to their success in order. In order. I start with the three-point. I think the three-point shot got them on top of Miami last night. It started with them making three-pointers, and then the defense followed. I agree. Usually it goes the other way. Usually they start with the defensive end, and that leads to other things. I thought yesterday it was just the opposite. Maybe that's an aberration, that it started with the three. But, you know, you can't tell me that you go 9 of 11 from behind the line in the first quarter and tell me defense was the key to the... I mean, that's bananas. 9 of 11.
Well, and in that stretch, again, which, you know, we outlined earlier, it's I think there were some misses in there that Miami made that were not defense-related. Yeah,
two missed free throws from Tucker back-to-back, and then Tucker came down two possessions later and missed two little bunnies in the lane. And Strus missed two open, wide-open three-pointers. Here, let me give you a stat that Jimmy Stewart gave me that's just excellent, feeds my agenda, rare that a stat just lines up perfectly with my agenda, but it does. So I think last night was a three-point shooting contest that you blew Miami away in. And you can say that, well, we took more open threes. We're better, you know, we're better at moving the ball and taking open threes. Well, it turns out the number of open threes are pretty equal in this series so far. They keep these stats. Open, wide open shots, whether you're 4 to 6 feet open or more than 6 feet open. So they have an advanced stat that open/wide open shots are defined as having the closest defender 4 feet or further away.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So open/wide open is 6 feet or further.
Mm-hmm.
Open is 4 feet or further. So if you combine those last two criteria, open/wide open shots defined by a defender being 4 feet further away, the Celtics are shooting from behind the line 51% on those shots. The Heat are shooting 34%
mm-hmm.
on those shots.
Mm-hmm.
You've taken roughly the same amount of attempts in that category. The Celtics have 57 attempts in the two games. The Heat have 50 attempts in the two games. You have better shooters.
Yes.
They're getting open nearly as much as you. Not quite. 57 to 50, that's less than 10%. So you are getting open a little bit more, but not by much. But you're making a hell of a lot more. Because you know why? You have better shooters.
Correct.
It's okay.
Yeah.
That's how you're built.
Yeah. Yeah, look, and again, the only thing I would add, and look, I suppose based on the numbers you give me, Miami's doing something similar. The Celtics go into lapses where they're not moving the ball and they don't get as open looks. If they get the open looks, they make them. And I think that's predicated on their ball movement. But that's fair. I mean, again, Mike, 51% on open threes is a huge number.
I mean,
that's a huge number.
And if you want to go the wide open category, okay, 6 feet or more of space. Wide open three-pointers, the Celtics are shooting 55%. The Heat are shooting 38%. Well, Felger, we get more wide open looks than everybody else. Nope, the Heat have taken more wide open threes than you. The Heat have more wide open, defined by 6 feet or more, three-point attempts in this series over you by a wide margin. Not by a wide margin, by 28 to 23. The Heat have had 28 attempts wide open threes. You've had 23 attempts wide open threes. You're shooting 55%. They're shooting 38%. Okay? That to me, I think, is the key to your team. Other teams play good defense. The Heat played good defense. The Bucks played good defense. I think the gap between your defense and theirs is much less than the gap that exists between your three-point shooting and their three-point
shooting. Yeah, you might be right about that.
So that's just... I'm sort of hung up on that. I don't know why, but I am. Chris in Chicago with the hockey take. Go ahead, Chris. Oh, you know what, Chris? Hold on. Just hold on. Well, you're in Chicago. Go ahead.
Hey, Mike, I know that it's fun to make fun of the Buffalo Sabres, but I'm thinking right now that we might want to trade rosters with them because they have a lot more young players. If those two buffoons could go back into that Lindholm trade, do you think that if they don't make that trade and they actually try to get younger and trade off a couple of players and they don't make the playoffs, do you think that there's more changes made? Do you think Sweeney loses his job?
Yes. Ownership does not want non-playoff years. They don't want to lose money in any given year. They don't want years without playoff money in their pocket. So the Bruins will never intentionally rebuild like that. It happened once in the Thornton year where they sucked so bad that, when I say the Thornton year, the year they drafted Thornton and they just bottomed out. They did it that year, but that's the only time in our lifetime. Nope, even if they have no chance to win a championship, they'd rather make the playoffs, get in the playoffs, make money in the playoffs, and then go to the next year. So that thing you want them to do, they will never, ever do. And I never, ever would want to trade places with the Buffalo Sabres. Sorry. As aggravated as we are with the Bruins, help me. Help me if the Sabres are my team. Back with more right after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
At the end of the day, it's still all about sports.
We don't take it seriously.
And whatever's on Jim Murray's mind.
Get over the persecution complex, you children.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I had to come set the tone. We go as I go. I'm the heart and soul of this team. My teammates say that to me all the time. And, you know, I try to be that for them. You know, the energy that I bring is contagious. And I know that, and I just try to bring it every game.
Marcus Smart going to have to do something here at the free throw line. Elevates, jumper, got it! And the Celtics drop 70 in the first half. Kick to the corner, Marcus Smart. He will drive it out of bio, draw some contact, throws up a circus shot, falling out of bounds, scored, and a foul. And when it's your night, sometimes it is just your night.
Marcus Smart gathers man going toward the hole, beat him, and then he gets a bump, contact, foul.
Count it. Tatum, left-hand dribble, finds Smart left side, pretty good look at a three, got it. Whew. I mean, there's just nothing Miami can do if the Celtics are shooting at this level. Jimmy Butler against Marcus Smart. Right-hand dribble to the baseline, pump fake, moves it to the middle, caught by Adebayo. Great strip by Marcus Smart. Another brilliant defensive play and a steal. Taking 2 points off the board. Now Marcus Smart.
Oh!
Ball fake. Loses Struce and knocks down the jumper. Ooh. A magnificent, perhaps game-defining sequence for Marcus Smart. And instead of 15, the Celtics push the lead back to 19. Tatum, over-the-shoulder pass. Marcus Smart lines up a left side three. Got it.
That dude is on fire, man.
Third of the night for Marcus Smart. He's got 18 points, 5 rebounds, 8 assists.
What I always do, being the energy guy that I am, being the point guard that I am, you know, I take a lot of pressure off our guys so they don't have to try to force it as much. So they, you know, they could be who they are. And that always helps. And tonight, that was the main goal. That's what I've been doing my whole career. You know, that's what I got drafted here to do. And, you know, I just waited my turn. And I'm blessed to be in the situation I am, to have the opportunity to go out and show what I can do. And everybody in the organization in the world is seeing what I can do at that point guard position. Just be who I am. You know, come out and be that leader. You know, stay on top of my guys. You know, it was a little bit tougher in game one to do it because you weren't out there. And as a player, sometimes when you're on the court and the guys or who's not on the court trying to tell you, you just kind of really don't want to hear it. You're listening, but it's tough, you know, and it's a different type of energy and feel when, you know, when I'm out there on the court, able to bark out the commands and really get into my guys and get them motivated. Because now it's like, okay, you know, if he's going to go out there and do it, I don't want to be the guy to slack. And so I got to come with it. And that's the beauty of having me on the court to do that, to settle us down, to get us what we need to do and make plays for my teammates.
Huge night for Marcus Smart. Integral part of the Celtics' success. And if you doubt that, he will tell you himself. Do what I always do. Be the energy guy that I am. It's good to see that everybody in the organization and the world can see what I am.
I stay on top of my guys. I get into my guys. My guys. My guys, because I'm the heart and soul.
I had to come set the tone. We go as I go. I'm the heart and soul of this team. My teammates say that to me all the time. And, you know, I try to be that for them. You know, the energy that I bring is contagious, and I know that, and I just try to bring it every game.
And now everyone in the world can see it.
Yeah. That's I love my favorite part. The world. Like everybody in the organization and in the world.
The world. And that's the beauty of me on the floor. That's the beauty of having me on the floor.
They get it in Spain. They get it in Italy. They get it in Korea. Everyone gets to enjoy Marcus Smart in game two.
I told you, I feel the same way about the Felger and Mass show. They can appreciate us all over the world. Yeah.
You know, come out and be that leader. You know, stay on top of my guys. You know, it was a little bit tougher in game one to do it because you weren't out there. And as a player, sometimes when you're on the court and the guys or who's not on the court trying to tell you, you just kind of really don't want to hear it. You're listening, but it's tough. You know, and it's a different type of energy and feel when, you know, when I'm out there on the court, able to bark out the commands and really get into my guys and get them motivated. Because now it's like, okay, you know, if he's going to go out there and do it, I don't want to be the guy that's slacking. So I got to come with it. And that's the beauty of having me on the court.
Stop. I mean, that's the line. Thank God for me.
And that's the beauty of having me on the court.
That's the beauty of having me on the court.
Yeah, they don't just get a player. They get a coach. Coach that will bark instructions at them. My guys.
Really good players don't talk like that.
No.
Never mind, you know, just good ones like Marcus.
And that's
Smart.
The beauty of having me on the court.
Thank God for me.
Yes. No, where would we be without me?
It's equal parts hilarious and extremely annoying. Because, again, it was great he was back. He was definitely a factor last night. That's without question. I just do think this can be a double-edged sword because no one loves Marcus Smart like Marcus Smart. And that can sometimes become problematic for Marcus Smart and that it just bombs away because it's my time to shine. We've all seen it. And look, it all worked for him last night. He chucked 12 three-pointers. He hit most of them. But he's not going to do that every time.
Did you see the break down the court where he went behind the back?
Oh, my God, that was horrible.
And missed?
Horrible.
Remember that?
Yes. That one, I was like, dude, what are you doing? Again, like, put away the Showtime thing. Just play.
And that's the beauty of having you on the court.
That's the beauty of having me on the court.
I'm glad you brought up that play. That one drove me bananas.
Yeah, well, you know, he was feeling it.
Oh, God. Just go in and make the layup.
Back to your calls. Keys in Boston waiting patiently. Go ahead, Keys.
Just to quickly on Marcus Smart. Look, that dude took below average to average athleticism, handle, drive, no jumper, and that 6'3 was almost a lotto pick. You don't do that without having an outside sense of self. So, you know, fall back on him a little bit. But I think the thing, the pushback and the defensiveness, Felger, you mentioned about the threes comes from just two things. Old associations with the three-point shot itself and the type of teams that employ it. So the shot is, you know, historically seen as like not reliable, fleeting, the whole live by the three, die by the three thing. Mavs mentioned 5 years ago, and Barkley swore up and down Golden State would never win because they shot threes. And then secondly, the teams associated with threes historically have been soft, finesse, run and gun, no D type of teams, like we teams, and the Celtics team darn sure ain't we, so people push back. It's just a lack of understanding of the modern NBA and bias and old antiquated associations with the three-point shot itself and the type of teams that run it.
It's a great call. Thanks, guys. Great call, Keys. Right.
He's right.
You know, because I feel this way too, or I felt this way. You just live and die by the three, Chuck and Duck? I don't want to be that kind of team. But, sorry, it's that kind of league. 3 and D. You hear it all the time, 3 and D.
And that's the beauty of having me on the court.
So you have an elite 3 and D team. That's it. And I guess everyone lives and dies by the three. So you might as well have a bunch of guys that can make it, which you do.
Yeah, so that, again, they built it this way, right? They did build it this way. Who wins, other than Philly, maybe, who wins by dumping it into the big guy in the post? I mean, it's just, you know, and you could say maybe Denver, except that Jokic is such a freaking good passer that they basically get him to fire it out to the perimeter anyway. I mean, they're still, I don't know where Denver ranks in threes, but I got to believe it's high.
No, and Milwaukee is kind of, you know, Giannis is a two-point player, but they surrounded him with three-point shooters. The problem is they suck, or they sucked this year, and they lost their best one in Middleton. But all those guys, I'm not telling you they shoot it well, but they all shoot it. Like, they're similar. They don't have a single guy out there that doesn't or won't shoot the three. And so, you know, they were on that too. No, I mean, it's the league. You've got more elite shooters or more guys that can get hot than the other guy. I think that's where it starts. Phil in Rockland has a Patriots thought. Go ahead, Phil.
Hey, I was going to talk about the Patriots, but it's just too depressing after you guys talking about them. I was going to switch gears to the Celtics. I have a question for you. So it seems that as we get farther into the playoffs, I hear a lot of callers call in and talk about we should be thanking Danny Ainge for this, that, and the other thing. Like, there's always this sort of, call for that. But I think we should just admit that it took a new coach to have the players buy in. It took a new general manager to make a few tweaks. And it took a team to buy in to it all. And so I don't know, it's just, there's just always these people that say that. But, I mean, by the end, I don't know if it was your show that he talked to or was the midday show where he said something about, like, you know, I haven't heard racist things in the Garden. It's just, it's like, where are you coming from? You know, I don't think he's an evil guy for saying that or anything like that.
But you know what he is, Phil?
He was tone deaf.
Yes. Something had passed Danny by.
Right, disconnected.
The culture of the players or the, you know, what's important in the league. Also, this, you know, this quote. He gave this quote a year before that. I think about, if you're talking politics or world events, and said, I'm not going to listen to my NBA players any more than I listen to some Hollywood actor. You know, liberal media, liberal Hollywood elite, like that sort of tone.
Right.
That sort of thing. And that just doesn't go over with the players in the NBA today. And I still think Danny Ainge, to the end, an excellent judge of talent. But something had gotten gummed up there. And something had gotten gummed up with the players and the coach. So that was integral to you know, what happened. With taking nothing away from what Danny did from an evaluation standpoint, they needed that turnover for the team to reach their potential.
Yeah, and Stevens needed it too. Like, I you know, they needed to get him out of there because the players weren't responding to him anymore. You know, that thing the other night in the third quarter when Udoka was screaming at them as they came off the floor, do you ever remember Tatum yelling like that? I don't. And when I say it, I mean, Stevens. Yeah. I don't ever remember Stevens getting on him quite like that. And what that tells me is Udoka can get away with it. Like, the relationship is such that he can bark at them and they'll take it.
Yeah, not the players. I know he's dang and gosh darned the refs in the past, but I don't ever remember getting into the players.
Not like that. I mean, not like that. And look, the other thing is, I think Stevens has got, you know, remember the year the Celtics had all those guys and there were too many cooks in the kitchen? That's a Danny Ainge team. Let me go get as many talented players as I can and throw them all together to the point where you have too many. Mm. I think Stevens is better at putting a team together and, you know, Ainge is better at amassing talent, if that makes sense. They needed that change. I think in retrospect, it's clear.
Here's an update. We're back with more on Agenda Free Friday.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This is the place Boston sports fans come to get some positive vibes for their teams.
Anything but. It's time to panic.
Maybe not. Now, back to reality with Felger and Maz.
Two down in the ninth. Frazier trying to end it right here. And a high fly to right field. That's deep. Jackie back on the track and leaping up. He's got it. And that ends the ball game. Win it 12-6.
It's one heck of a story tonight. That guy right there doing all the damage.
Yeah, last night it was the Nick Pivetta show. Tonight belonged to Trevor Story.
Yeah, did a great job. Hey, got a complete game, then we almost go bullpen type game.
Indeed.
It's the beauty of this game.
12-6 final.
How feel about your baseball team, Mass?
Better, definitely better. Look, again, when you look over the last week, and I was just doing some of the math here myself, the last nine games, they're hitting .285. They're averaging 6.5 runs a game. The OPS is .840. They're 6-3. I mean, is it a coincidence that when they start hitting, they start winning? Mm. So now they get the Mariners in here this weekend for four. They've already won one. I want a minimum three in this series. This is a team that was under 500 coming in. And you got dog food coming up on the schedule. There's a trip to Chicago here. But other than that, it's Baltimore and then Cincinnati and then Oakland. You clean up on these bums over the next 2 weeks, you're back in it. But in the same breath, I would tell you, I just think the next 2 weeks are huge. Huge. If it goes the other way in the next 2 weeks, you're in big trouble. Okay, so you're now starting to hit. You've gotten back in it. Don't F it up. You got a chance to play your way. You're only four out of the wild card. It's not like you're dead and buried in that.
How many teams between you?
Three, I think. So, but I don't, you know, and one of them's Toronto. Toronto hasn't played great either. So, you know, I'm not telling you they're guaranteed, but they're, I just don't think they're dead yet. As bad as they've played, they are not dead yet. They're starting to hit. And, you know, look, the story thing is a different story altogether. I sort of gave you my 2 cents on that earlier. But if they hit, they'll be competitive. And they're starting to hit. Let's hope it stays that way.
Okay. Can mix in Red Sox with all our other topics on the board. Mike in Attleboro wants to talk Bruins. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, I don't know if this has been brought up before, but next year, if the Bruins are kind of teetering the playoff line, I wouldn't be opposed to trading Marchand. I think that will help bridge the gap between you can get a good player and maybe like a first-round pick and kind of get best of both worlds. Not kind of out of the playoffs, but you're contending a little bit for it.
So, Mike, I'll tell you, I don't think they would ever consider it. I just
really?
We've been over this. No, I don't think they sell. They don't sell. They're even if keeping the players means they're just going to be good and not great.
Isn't it now obvious they're adverse to big change? Because firing Cassidy is not going to be a big change.
No,
we all see that coming.
It's not that. It's not that they're adverse to big change. They're adverse to going to the bottom of the league. They're adverse to being sellers. They're adverse to being a non-player. They are adverse. I keep saying this.
To rebuild.
They are. What the Jacobs want is profit. Profit is made in the postseason in hockey. It is largely a gate, meaning ticket sale driven league. Still, the TV money's better than it used to be, but they make their money selling tickets. The more home playoff dates you get, the more money you make. It used to be they broke even in the regular season and the playoff revenue was, you know, off the top. Now something tells me they're more profitable all year round. Be that as it may, the gravy comes in having home playoff dates. That's all the Jacobs care about. Home playoff dates. Selling Brad Marchand does not mean more playoff dates. Even if it means long term, they think about it year in, year out. They're just, you know, bean counting. And so this is why they do not sell players. They sold Bork at the very end as a favor to him. And they sold Thornton and that's it. Like name me another time they sold a good player.
I mean, they really haven't.
I mean, if you want to go way back and like, you know, Espo for Park and like that, like Harry Sinden used to make hockey trades.
Sure.
But just to sell, you know, they just sold Thornton and they just sold Bork. And again, at the end, but they're not going to sell Marchand or Pastrnak. Now, they may let them go in free agency and not pay them. That happens. But they're not going to sell these players. I would just get that out of your head.
Okay, but then just stop there for a second. If they let a guy go in free agency who's a good player that they could get something for, isn't that stupid?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm just making sure that we're on the same page.
No, but trading Torrey Krug in the last year when you know he's going to walk means you're not going to be as good that year, which means you may not get as many home playoff dates that year. That's what it all comes down to.
Okay, so but I want to ask you on Marchand because
By the way, if you're going to do that and they're not doing it, it's stupid to even talk about. Pastrnak's the guy you trade before Marchand.
Okay,
even though he's younger.
Okay, so this is what I was going to ask you. I mean, I love what Marchand does. We all do, but don't you think Marchand also has sort of a stigma? In other words, isn't he precisely the kind of guy you could trade? Could you say Bergeron's gone now? He's a pain in the ass. It could get worse without Bergeron. I mean, think of it this way. Who's going to be the captain of the team next year?
He is.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think they view him the way we view him. I think he's the captain next year.
It's definitely going to be him. What do you think? It's going to be McAvoy?
I mean, it should be McAvoy, but I think it's Marchand.
I'd give it a McAvoy.
Me too.
Yeah, I would too, but it's going to be Marchand. I'm with Mike on this.
I'm not convinced.
Okay. Well,
with all the pull he has in that room?
Yeah, I'm not convinced. I'm not sure. Because I think there are a lot of guys that look at Marchand sideways sometimes with some of the stuff he does.
I've never seen any indication of that unless you know something I don't.
Yeah, right. No, that I'm felt Mazzy informed.
No. And if you do know something, then let's hear it.
No, I'm not. I don't have any indication of it either. I'm just telling you human nature.
I've never seen one.
The guy's been suspended and fined more than any guy in the league. You don't think teammates look at him sometimes and say, Marshy took that too far?
Nope. It's our guy. It's Marshy. We love him.
Oh, I disagree.
Yeah. If it's a lie, we fight on that lie. That's usually how it goes.
Have you seen any inkling of it?
No, but I'm just telling you, it has to exist somewhere under the surface.
Make with the take. What do you know?
I don't know anything.
If you know something and we don't, then I'd like to know that. I've seen zero indication of Marchand having anything other than 100% full support from the guys in his room.
Yeah, look, again, and publicly that might be true. But you can't tell me that a guy that plays like he plays.
You're talking like common sense.
But yes.
These pro athletes don't think that way.
Oh, I think when they're away from the game, they do.
Jimmy?
Don't you think the managers of the team, Neely, Sweeney, Cassidy, right now, would object to Marchand being the captain because it's not very marketable for the team that a captain has been suspended so many times?
Fans love the guy. I mean, every time Marchand does something stupid, all we get is support from fans.
He's the jersey.
No, I'm not talking about fans. I'm talking about how the organizational perception of it, of him is because of the managers.
What can I tell you?
It'd make him more marketable. He's the number one jersey I see on Bruins fans.
Yeah, I don't. I just look again. I'm not telling you I know anything. I'm just telling you what the image of the guy is. That feels like a hard guy to have as your captain.
You watch, he'll be the captain.
No, you're probably right.
I'm not telling you that.
I'm not telling you that you're wrong. I'm just telling you that that's a path I could see an organization balking at. That's all. He's a chippy, dirty player. Like that's the guy you're going to make your captain? I don't know.
Is Terry O'Reilly captain?
Oh, so that's fair.
I mean, I don't know.
No, so that's fair. I forgot about that. Were they good then?
The lunch pail AC? Went to two cup finals,
buddy.
When
he was a captain?
I don't know if that timed out exactly, but roughly the same era. Yes, wasn't it?
I thought he was a crappy captain too, frankly.
No, well, these are the Bruins we're talking about. Yeah, lower your bar there, Maz. Back with more in a long commercial-free segment.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
This is purely a take that exists in my head.
Getting into your head.
Tell you what's in our head.
With hot sports takes.
And we share it with you.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The entire second half of the year has been about responses for the Boston Celtics. Every time they would lose a game, they would come back and not only win, they would win impressively. And tonight, with perhaps the entire series on the line, the Celtics don't just answer the call. They dominate. Start to finish in a blowout game two road win. The final score, Boston 127, Miami 102.
All right, back to your phones. Celtics still obviously the lead sports story in this town. Here's Chris in Medford with a thump we haven't hit on today that I wanted to. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, so I just had a small problem with Smart in his minutes last night. I know he was playing great. I think there's a possibility that he pumped his own head up a bit like he did against Milwaukee with how well he was scoring. But if all week we heard about this foot sprain, he had to miss game one, and he was only activated, I think, a short time before tip-off last night. Why is he in the game up 30 with all the bench guys with 5 minutes to go?
Chris,
if the foot hurts as much as they made it sound, get him the hell out of the game.
Why was he in the game? It's one word. Or it's two and hyphenated. I couldn't tell you.
Hyphenated.
Triple-double.
Yep, exactly right. I think Udoka was trying to get it for him.
Did you hear Van Gundy and Jackson talking about the broadcast?
Yeah.
And rightfully so. So, like, that is a takeaway. Smart looked good even on the bench the night before.
And that's the beauty of having me on the floor.
And then he plays by far the most minutes last night. He played 40. No one played over 33-15.
Mm-hmm.
Jaylen Brown was the next guy at 33-15. And Smart played over 40 minutes, 40 minutes, 18 seconds.
I had to come set the tone. Go as I go.
With a bad foot.
Correct.
To what? Get him the 10th rebound? That's what he needed?
I feel short-sighted. Yeah, he selfish, left him in- stupid, whatever now, look, you want to call it. It's gross.
I mean, his replacement wasn't there. Or, let me rephrase. His backup wasn't there.
Understood.
Okay, but even so, still get him out of there. What are you doing? He didn't have to play the last 4 or 5 minutes that he played. Whatever it was, the game was out of hand. They want to isolate on Pritchard. Let him. What are they going to do? Lose by 18 instead of 25?
They're up 30 effing points.
Right, exactly. That's right. So, but Udoka, you know, did this during the regular season too with Tatum, with Brown. He left him on the floor at the end of these games sometimes when they were up big. So this is like a flaw. I think it's something we got to watch going down the stretch here. Well, you know, what these guys have in their legs, let alone with a guy coming off an injury.
Alan's got a thought on the Red Sox. Hi, Alan.
I do. And before I do, I just want to let you know, Felger, you can do whatever you want about three-pointers or this and that. I'm no basketball expert. They're so far better than Miami and Golden State. the more money you want to make, the more money you can bet. Anyway, Maz, again, you remember since January where I told you they're fourth place and they have a shot to make the playoffs. Yeah, they're four games out of a playoff spot because there's three playoff, the three wild cards this year. And I'm just curious, in my opinion, and I did a little research, I think they have the worst outfield in all of baseball, including Pittsburgh and everyone else.
They might.
They might, right. Okay, so why did everyone think this team, I'm talking when they're hot right now and they're hitting, why did everyone think when you got a utility guy, which is Kiki Hernandez, a Verdugo who can't hit lefties.
And the worst hitting out, you know, baseball player in a century.
Right.
Jackie Bradley, what makes people think this team's going to be good? Is that what he's going for?
Yeah, so look, again, I thought that the middle of their lineup was solid and that they would get away with a lot of the ancillary stuff in the outfield. And do you realize that that Bogarts, J.D. Martinez, and Devers, not in that order, are all in the top five in the league in hitting?
You mentioned this yesterday off the air, I think. Blows me away.
They were all in the top five going into last night in batting average. In fact, now that I think of it, Devers was second, Bogarts was fourth, Martinez was fifth going into last night. So those three guys have hit. They haven't hit for power. But the other guys, generally, complete zeros across the board. Verdugo been a huge disappointment. Hernandez has been terrible all year. Bradley, you know, has been sporadic. He's been better at home than on the road. Dahlbeck's been a black hole. They get nothing out of catcher. Story was hitting 205 until last night. So literally the other six spots of the lineup were giving them complete zeros. Allen's not wrong. Offensively, defensively, their outfield's okay.
But you've talked about this before. What does it matter if you've got a poor hitting positional group? It doesn't work. It's what you have 1 through 9.
Right, exactly. So people say, well, their outfield offensively sucks. I would say, yeah, but their infield could be elite.
Yeah.
Between, you know, and I suppose you throw J.D. Martinez in there. If Story hits, second, third, and short are all above average.
It's just it matters what you hit 1 through 6 in your lineup. Doesn't matter where they play.
Correct. See, I don't put a lot of stock in that either. A lot of people, buy into that traditional formula. You're going to have power at the corners, speed up the middle, you know, power in left field, power in right field. What difference does it make if your shortstop hits? If your shortstop and your second baseman hit, you can get away with punch and Judy hitters in left and right field.
Scott in Lexington, thought on the Patriots coaching staff. Hi, Scott.
Hey, Michael, Tony, Jimmy. Quick one on Belichick and his two assistant coach. So the owners of the Giants and the owners of Detroit are very close with Bill, and they probably put a lot of faith in him, and he totally let them down. Like, they probably had the same questions we did about their offensive ability, their ability to scheme, play calling, all this other stuff. So then they failed spectacularly, and then they watched Bill to see, okay, these two guys, you said they were great, now they're not great. What are you going to do? So he hired them back up, and he made them offensive coordinators, kind of proved them wrong, that he had faith in them, kind of to show, show that he was right.
Yeah, so we're throwing Mac Jones to the wolves because Bill wants to prove the Morrows were wrong to let go Joe Judge or something, or that he had Joe Judge right and the Giants had him wrong. I don't see it. I think if Joe Judge cost him any money, he wouldn't be here.
And they're short money, and they're his friends.
Thank you.
That's it.
Thank you.
Nothing more than that. No, yeah, it's Machiavellian. What he's really trying to do, it's a web. He's always spinning a web, as Belichick, as it's chest and checkers, don't you see? Yeah, it's Belichick's web, like Charlotte's web. He's getting back at everyone that's wronged him.
I mean, this is completely consistent with how he's handled spots on the roster, too, by the way. Kyle Van Noy, bring him back. Malcolm Butler, bring him back.
At short money.
Yeah. Yes. Who else? Have I left someone out?
Oh, Jamie Collins.
Deion Branch, bring him back. Jamie Collins, bring him back. He just, because it's a known commodity, he can get him cheap, and in most cases, he knows he can control him. So once he gets it, I would say that's especially true of the coaches. He knows that they'll do what he wants them to do.
No, he brought Joe Judge back, Maz, for the scallop technique.
Yeah.
For his elite use of the scallop technique.
No, the shuffle. Yeah.
Have you seen some of the videos that we've been sent?
Yeah, yeah.
Of the scallop technique?
Oh, no. By who?
Oh, yeah, they're out there.
Emails?
You know, we've been working technique here for years. Yeah. We call it scallop. And scallop's really just a vertical shuffle where you're playing full speed, the game speed. Game speed we declare as, you know, that necessary speed to play within phase and be able to adjust in short space and track movement.
This freaking guy is such a freaking chooch. I can't tell you what a Joe Hardo coach this guy is. His scallop technique, Matt, you see it?
I had it right.
Yeah, you did.
I got it. I told you. Look at that. I'm textbook.
Yep, it was good. The only one disappointed about that technique was Matt Patricia. He thought it was something entirely different.
He wanted to eat it.
Yeah. Well, I thought you meant the potatoes.
Put a little butter on that.
Creamy and cheesy.
Yeah, what do those come with? Yeah. We have an hour
the scalp technique.
Hour to go.
I'm telling you, I take instruction well.
Versus the bull and matador. And you don't want to be the little baby deer that's just been born. This freaking guy.
The scalp technique really works on going from that full speed.
Thanks.
So keeping your feet under you as a base and keeping your feet moving.
No, thanks, Joe.
And really the technique we worked for years, okay, in terms of making us more effective is really what's making us a lot safer too. So when you talk about some of the significant injuries.
I got it. It's effective and safe. Hour to go on. You're amazed, Maz. Look at the videos.
Oh, no. I got it right. I'm good at it.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.